And another thing, you're listening to KPCRadio.com. I'm James.
I'm Robert.
And today we're going to talk about movies and the Oscars, because it's that time of year. But first, we're going to go over some fun I had on campus yesterday.
God.
Now, Nick was telling me that their name, the guy who fought this group is LaRouche. I'm trying to say that right, or he's nodding me off. LaRouche started this cult, what everyone else calls them, and a couple of his followers were on our campus yesterday in the free speech zone, which is hilarious in and of itself that we have a free speech zone. And they had posters, and you're going to love this, Robert. It was a picture of Obama, big giant picture of his head with a Hitler mustache on it. And it said, "Hitler, Obama is Hitler." That's what they were saying. Obama is Hitler. Stop Obama's war. And so I just went right up to him. I said, "Okay, what war do we need to stop?" And they went on for 5 minutes about how Obama is actually causing Ukraine. So this is good stuff. So apparently, literally, Obama is the fuse. Oh, Ukraine doesn't matter. Putin doesn't matter. None of that tension for the last 200 years matters. It's just Obama. He's the one who's going to start thermonuclear World War III. That's exciting, right?
Yeah, that's really exciting. I'm looking forward to it on my TV station.
Well, we're in Los Angeles. We're the first target. I'm sorry.
What? I'm sorry. The Oscars happened. I didn't pay attention.
So I asked them, do you think this is a good way to get your message across by putting this big face here with a Nazi mustache, as if
okay.
All Nazis have it?
That's a good question.
I thought it was, too.
I think that's a good question.
And they, let me just cut to the chase. They eventually just started literally ignoring me. They started saying, I'm not talking to you anymore. You're being rude. You're being a high school debater. They called me a high school debater and said, I'm obviously way too smart, you know, being sarcastic and stuff. So I started saying, oh, so you're saying you don't want to debate with me? Oh, so you're saying you don't want high school skills? You're less than that. They totally hated me, dude, and they stopped listening to me.
I actually surprisingly, I'm not upset with this.
Good.
I'm happy you did it.
I'm actually happy you did it.
I'm going to present the boring perspective of this, which I know you're going to hate and everybody hates.
Because that's what's all good on radio, boring perspectives.
Right. If there are a bunch of people around them acknowledging the fact that they exist, it's only going to add fuel to the fire. So if you ignore these people, doesn't matter what kind of a sign they're holding up, then they'll probably go away because they're like, damn it, we don't matter.
That is true if you live in the Simpsons world and it's the Halloween episode. You remember that one where all the ads came to life and they said, just ignore the ads because all the ads became monsters. That's not actually how it works in real life.
If it was true,
these guys would be long gone.
They could stay.
Yeah, but they're not in the regular media, right? They're just on campus. So obviously ignoring them doesn't do anything.
They could stay and I can go and have my lunch while they're yelling.
That's a good point you bring up, though, because I said that, too. I mean, isn't your point to change minds here? And they said, no, I don't want to change your mind. Who are you? I said, who am I? I'm the guy who goes to this school where you're protesting. Shouldn't you care about me? And I'm like, no, you're a jerk. We don't care about you. And so I start asking other people.
It's scary.
I pull people like off the streets and I say, hey, this sign over here, does this make them more or less credible to you? And every one of them said, no, it makes them less credible. I don't want to listen to them. They're crazy. And they're like, well, I just proved you wrong. And then that's when they said, I'm not talking to you anymore. And they ignored me the rest of the time like 5-year-olds. It was hilarious.
I'm glad you did this. I'm actually glad
hopefully they're
you did
there later.
This. Huh?
Hopefully they're still there. We can do it after the
show. I don't want to engage in conflict here with people.
Oh, I'll get you. You like conflict last week.
I like conflict in music. Films, but not in real life.
I guess that's a good enough segue. We can end that. We can end my rant against the libertarians there. Segue right into movies. Because that's what film's about. Conflict. Conflict in hipsters.
Conflict happens
in every movie, in every great comedy, every story.
Every story has even a little bit. I'm showing my fingers are making the shape of a bean.
A bean.
A little
bit.
Yeah, that much. That's the smallest amount.
Okay. That's quantified. That's a Robert of conflict. I'm going to make that a new unit. All right. So like I said, we're talking about the Oscars, so we're talking about hipsters, because Robert loves when I throw that word around. What does hipsters mean?
I'm always skeptical of definitions of things. I'm still trying to figure out what it means to sit down.
Whoa. Well, you're sitting right now.
I know, but what does that mean? Right?
Well, let's do that later, because that's boring radio.
Epistemology. How do you know something?
So I'm going to give you a new definition of hipster. I think I do that every single discussion for you. I give you a new definition. Here's my new one. A hipster is someone who actually thinks the Artist, the Hurt Locker, the King's Speech, and the Reader are best film. If you think those are best pictures, congratulations, you're a hipster because those movies are stupid and you should be stupid, should be considered stupid too.
That's
my definition.
I have a theory for the few listening.
Okay.
I think James is just doing this because he wants to see if I get angry.
That's about 10% of it, yes.
Oh, it's only 10%?
Yeah, it's actually only 10%. Because I thought this for a long time, but now that you're here, I get to say it and get your reaction.
The King's Speech I thought was a good movie. I don't know.
I actually didn't see it, so I'm going to be like really hypocritical and stupid here. But that's the fun of it.
I thought it was a good movie. I forgot what was running against it that year.
Okay, let's see. We had 127 Hours, Black Swan. This is when they started doing... they did that the year before. Because they went from 5 to 10 nominees. So this is the second year they were doing that. Oh, The Social Network is in there. Toy Story 3 was in there. True Grit. Inception. And The Fighter. And Black Swan. So obviously The King's Speech is the worst out of all those, because who cares about a king who can't talk? Oh, does the billions of dollars in world power hurt? Oh, poor little king.
It was beautifully shot.
He can't talk. He only commands an army. Oh, poor little king.
It was a good story, but I think that they had a bias against Inception. I really think Inception was good, and they...
Inception should have won, and this is going to be my thesis.
Sometimes, I guess today, it seems like a lot of people are against technology in film, whereas technology can tell a good story, as we saw this year with Gravity.
Yeah, but that one didn't win.
I agree. I would have given it to 12
Years
a Slave.
Let me give you my thesis there. For what should win is what is most culturally powerful and impactful.
How do you measure it,
mate? Well, let me finish.
Okay, sorry.
Jeez, man.
Sorry, I'm just firing darts. They're not
You're
bullets.
You're firing darts.
I'm firing darts at you with
my... Okay. So anyways, you can do that by... We have to take the Oscars and offset them by a couple of years. Like right now, we had the 2013 Oscars for movies that were made between January 1st, December 30th, whatever years they call it. What if we did this year, we gave Best Picture to a film that was made in 2011? And then you have this hindsight, right? Because obviously, what year was that? I think that was 2010. No, it was 2009, The Hurt Locker won. So it won in 2010. It was made in 2009. The Hurt Locker won. If we had those Oscars 2 years later, obviously we would have given it to Avatar, because 2 years later you say to someone, hey, what'd you think of The Hurt Locker? They go, huh? You say, what'd you think of Avatar? Oh my God, I got a 3D television just to see it. It was so awesome. I wish I could go to Pandora. That's what I'm talking about. Stories that matter. You see what my point is here?
Stories that matter. I don't think you can measure this.
Oh, really? Because I got the whole list of them right here, and we're going to see how many of these movies you know. I'm only going half the
list. I know,
list.
But something. If something matters...
Did you see The Greatest Show on Earth?
No.
Did you see All About Eve?
Yes.
Did you like it?
Yes.
Best Picture?
What was in the category? That was an old... I watched that in the movie class, cinema class.
So you didn't even really know what other outside class...
Yeah, no, I didn't know what the other
really,
films...
That's really impactful there. I mean, there are movies we know from the past that we know because they're good. I mean, I mean, even the 70s is kind of getting old,
saying
too.
A film is good and it's impactful requires a hell of a lot of evidence.
I don't think it does.
I don't think you could measure impact in society.
Do you know what The Odyssey is?
I know 2001, A Space Odyssey.
Very
was,
good. Do you know what Homer's
film.
Odyssey was?
No, yes, I know what Homer's Odyssey.
Do you have any idea how many other stories were out around that time in oral tradition?
I don't.
Of course you don't, because they're gone. We only remember that one, because it was the best. That's what makes it the best.
It seems like somebody's stroking themselves there.
Wait, what?
I
that was weird.
It was an amazing... It was great, but it's... There are so many things that happen to society in between the time a movie is released and then the time the next one is released. It's like, how do we measure the impact of Avatar? Avatar had a lot of impact on technology. That was incredible.
True too. That should be part of the consideration, just like Citizen Kane, which is one of the things everyone talks about when they say its impact on society was because it changed filmmaking. You can't deny that.
I guess not, but I don't. I have to look at the history of how filmmaking changed because of it. But I know with Orson Welles, his techniques did change the way filmmakers looked at cinema. He was big on using ambient music and ambient noises to enhance drama in a scene rather than the standard, the old movies. I can't say it, but the songs of the old movies with the violin, They would underscore every little walk.
Right.
And he didn't like that. And he changed it. So, yeah.
Yeah, he had a lot of firsts in Citizen Kane. And that was one of the things people say that is one of the best films ever. Like, literally ever. Because it was not just a good story, but because of the way it was made and how it impacted the industry. So that's one of my points of how Avatar, obviously, no one can deny Avatar had a long-lasting impact. Even if one of the bigger arguments is that it was a bad influence, because now everything's in friggin' 3D, costing three times as much for the ticket for a movie that should not be in 3D.
Yeah, and some of the, honestly, I hate to say this, but for now, 3D, it's not that great. It's going to get really good at some point, but right now it's like, oh, okay.
Well, it's a lot better than it used to be.
Definitely. I just, I can see a movie in 2D and I'll be fine. I'm just saying.
Yeah, me too. I actually choose not to go to the 3D one.
Yeah, it's whatever.
Unless I find out maybe it was made for, I still say the two best 3D movies in like the current generation of 3D movies is Avatar and the last Saw movie. And people look at me crazy.
That was in 3D?
Yeah, the last Saw was in 3D. And people think I'm crazy because how can you compare Avatar to a stupid horror movie? Because I think, what is the point of 3D movies? It's to make you feel immersed, right?
Right.
Several times during that movie, Saw, I was like scraping my arms. Like, oh, there's like feeling there's guts on me. It's the gross and the completely classless, baseline, stupid version of storytelling. Like getting to those base emotions that's not real. You know what I'm talking about?
I don't.
Like cheap scares, cheap thrills, nothing any
cheap,
substantial.
Okay.
You know, gross out type stuff that's not really scary. It's just gross.
Yeah, it's just nasty.
But you know what? That's the point of the 3D is to make you feel immersed. I was grossed out enough. I thought I was immersed. So I'm saying that's a good use of 3D. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, no, I get it. You're using the 3D
itself,
side of it to compare it. You're not talking about the rest of
Exactly my point. So everything else, like the first one I think I saw after Avatar was the remake of that Greek story. Oh, what's it called now? The one with Perseus in it? Clash of the Titans. That was in 3D, but that was one of the ones where it was made, and then Avatar came out, so the producer says, oh, convert it to 3D, and we'll make some more money. It was so utterly horrible.
Really?
Like if I saw it in 2D, it would have been just like an okay action movie, but the conversion just made it horrible. It made it unbearable. You couldn't even watch it. All right, so let's talk about the last Oscars that was just last week. 12 Years a Slave. You saw this one, right?
Yeah.
You had a lot to say about this online.
That was,
it impacted you a lot, right?
That was incredible. It was the least watered-down version of slavery I've seen in cinema.
I don't know. Django Unchained was pretty good.
Django Unchained was hilarious.
What about...
But I don't... You know, was it... Was I looking at that as a reference to history? No, and I'm sure that wasn't even the point. I think they were having fun with it. And
oh, definitely. Yeah.
Good for them.
Yeah. So you have a printout here on this year's Oscars.
Yep.
So what about this year's Oscars specifically did you want to mention?
Well, what's become apparent to me is, or what I've been thinking about rather, is that, like, Best Director.
Yeah.
They gave Best Director to Alfonso Cuarón.
Yeah.
But
great director.
Okay, I'm conflicted about this. I don't disagree with it.
But
it depends on how you define director.
Okay.
Because where I come from, or in the traditional sense, the director has to do with performance.
Mm-hmm.
Mostly. Obviously in cinema, camera is involved, how you move that camera, how you pace the movie. But performance is a primary indicator of best direction, usually. And I think that what Steve McQueen did and what Alexander Payne did with Nebraska, Steve McQueen, of course, did 12 Years a Slave, and what they did in Dallas Buyers Club was incredible for performance.
Mm-hmm.
And again, Steve McQueen also did great with the camera. He knows exactly where to place that camera so he can make you feel uncomfortable and angry or whatever he needs you to feel. He knows where to place it. So he did his job from visually and through performance. And if you saw, I know you haven't seen the film, but those performances were incredible. But with Alfonso's case, he took us somewhere that we haven't been in a long time. And he did it in such a way that blew us out of our seats. I don't know if the performances were that incredible compared to the other films that I mentioned. And I don't even know I should be comparing them. Can you even compare a performance? But where he took us with that camera and with those emotions, with the music and pacing, that was incredible. So I'm not going to say I disagree.
Mm-hmm.
with Best Director, I just am conflicted about how to define this category. And also cinematography.
Okay.
I would have given it...
Let me give you my opinion on Alfonso Cuarón, because I've only seen two films of this guy's.
Which two have you seen?
Harry Potter and Children of Men.
You haven't seen Gravity?
No, I haven't seen Gravity
yet. Oh, okay.
Yeah, I actually didn't go to the movies all last semester, which is kind of bumming me out. That's usually how it goes now with the Netflix generation coming out, right? I'll wait till it's on Netflix and just have it sent to my mailbox.
It's okay, you can see it.
So I'm kind of a year behind on TV and movies now. But Alfonso Cuarón, I like, and for the exact opposite reasons of what you say a good director should be. Because I think the best part of direct, and you're probably going to say this is cinematography, but I think composition is actually what makes a director. And you're going to come to me with cinematography, I know that. But it's a little bit more than cinematography, because cinematography deals with what ends up on the in the image on the film.
Lighting.
Right.
Wardrobe, lighting, everything goes into it.
Right. Whereas directing is first having the vision at all. I mean, traditionally one way to say it is like the director has a vision and it's the cinematographer's job to take that vision and put it on the film.
Right.
So they're very close together, cinematographer and director. They're very close-knit, which is why it's really funny reading biographies about James Cameron and how he and his DPs always get into arguments, but that's something for another show because James Cameron's awesome. And it's really hard for me to describe how a director is different from a cinematographer, because they have that vision and they tell the cinematographer, and you know, so who's the real artist here? The one with the vision or the one who's putting it on film, you know?
That's actually a really good point.
Yeah.
I've been thinking about that too, because sometimes when we describe directors, mm-hmm. and we're like, oh, the way he lit, the way that room was lit, if depending on what the sentence you use, you'll be pointing towards a cinematographer or a director. Some directors are very visually oriented.
Yeah.
Stanley Kubrick was a photographer first, and then he became a director. So for him...
That's why his early films are no good.
His early films are amazing. Don't listen to But 2001 was the best. He was... That would be a legit... how should I use it?
Definition?
Something to recognize him for is his compositions.
Yeah.
He would tell his DPs, this is where I want the camera. This is where her body is going to be. This is where his body is going to be. Those lines are going to be lined up like that. That was him. Martin Scorsese was also very visual, not with lighting, but with moving the camera. I need the camera to move this way. There's a famous example of him working on Casino with cinematographer Robert Richardson, who's done amazing work for years. And Robert Richardson read the script and sent Marty all the notes, just a bunch of suggestions. Hey, why don't you try this with the camera? I can see the camera moving like that. He sent him the entire script with red lines everywhere.
The cinematographer did.
Yes. And then Martin Scorsese sends him the script back with a note on it saying, I didn't read all of it, and I appreciate the fact that you took the time to visually put your stamp on it, but I'm the one who decides how the camera needs to move because this is my thing.
Mm-hmm.
So you need to work with me. And Robert Richardson laughs about it in interviews because like that's when I got my first like, hey, welcome to Hollywood 101. Like don't interfere.
Right.
Meet the director first. And by the way, arguments happen all the time.
Yeah.
That's
well, the normal. James Camerons are just notorious.
It fosters creativity, but I think
the James Camerons aren't foster firings and layoffs.
Well,
that's
yeah,
why they're funny
I know
stories.
That. But I think it's a good point. The director, some directors let their DPs get really creative.
Oh, for everyone in the audience too, in case they were being childish, DP is director of photography.
Oh, right.
Because
sorry
we said cinematography, cinematographer, and then DP.
Director of photography, otherwise, I'll just say cinematographer.
That was for the teenagers in the audience.
But they sometimes get the creative freedom to do whatever they want. And some directors are not like that. They know exactly what they want,
yeah.
But they need their cinematographers to do what they're extremely magical at, which is lighting the thing.
And a
they
lot of
know
cinematographers become directors. I think Robert Zemeckis was one of the...
Was he a DP? Was he a cinematographer?
I think so.
I could totally see that.
Yeah, they kind of learn with Jan de Bont. He was one of them.
Ernest Dickerson was a great DP, and he decided to transition into directing.
Right, exactly. Because these are very similar jobs.
Yeah.
But here's I thought of another one that encapsulates, or not encapsulates, but showcases more what I mean, like what a director does. Steven Spielberg. It's a little cliche, But what isn't talked about Spielberg so much is his choice of odd shots. Like, there's two that pop out into my mind. One that I was recently saying that Christopher Nolan stole is Spielberg in AI uses a shot where he shoots into the side view mirror of a car of the boy, you know, the little boy who's the robot.
Right.
The mother's abandoning him and she's driving away. So we see like her reflection in the window and him in the mirror. So the, but he's like most, it's mostly mirror in the frame. So he's not shooting what is the subject. He's shooting a reflection of what is the subject, and it's moving away in the reflection. So that's what I'm saying. It's that type of decision for that shot that makes what a director is.
That is one of the things. Yeah. But I've realized when I was first starting out in film, I thought strictly visual. Mm-hmm. It's about where the camera is and how the music works with that movement, where the camera moves. And now I'm realizing how important it is to get performance. That is the magic, because a lot of people in our generation are very visually savvy. They're gonna be. Video games and everything has made them visually savvy. But something that we miss out on, that I did poorly on some of the short films I worked on, was getting a good performance out of people.
Yeah, and that's one thing that's kind of against my Steven Spielberg point too, because by now he only works with the best actors, so he doesn't even really have to worry about it anymore, you know what I mean?
The greatest actors can do some amazing research on their own, and they will do the homework. But when you have to inspire people to get those performance out. You hear stories about directors who push and push and push, and they finally get that shot.
That's one of my best Spielberg stories, actually. Did you see Color Purple?
I haven't seen that one.
And there was it's about racism in the South. It's like a diary of a black girl. It's not slavery, but it's like the Reconstruction era or early 20th century. And it's about a black girl played by Whoopi Goldberg, I believe, and it's told from her point of view. And one of her friends is played by Oprah Winfrey. And there's a scene where Oprah Winfrey is going into town and she's surrounded by all these white people and they're screaming the N-word at her eventually. And, you know, they're taunting her because they don't want a black woman around. You know, typical racist stuff you'd see. But Spielberg, for preparing for her for the role, told Oprah that they're going to be taunting you a little bit, saying, get out of here, we don't like your kind. But he didn't say they were going to be screaming the N-word at her face. He told the extras to do that on the side.
Right,
I want you to go up there, I want you to scream the word, you know, the N-word right in her face. Just be as terrible as you can. And Oprah, like, started, like, crying during the scene. Yeah. And because she didn't know it was coming. And she wasn't upset, but that's one of the ways he, like, inspired her without inspiring her. He took the role, like, literally out of her, almost without her consent. So it kind of sounds like a horrible story. But she was working with him, so that's... It's kind of a weird relationship to explain between the actor and director.
That is actually a great example, because that's what a lot of directors do. Great directors do. They also let their actors improv.
For the comedy, you know.
Sometimes they, like you just said, they tell one actor something, they don't tell the other one it's coming.
Yeah.
This happened in Goodfellas with Joe Pesci and Ray Liotta.
Mm-hmm.
Martin Scorsese told Joe Pesci to keep playing whatever he was doing. Mm-hmm. And Ray Liotta didn't know it was coming. So then you have that whole, what do you mean I'm funny? Well, you call me a clown. And then I think they said that when they were going through it, Ray Liotta looked at, like, what's going on? And so then they put that in the script and said, let's play that. But those secrets are the best part. That's why I've now taken the visual understanding of directing, and now I'm more focused on performance. I want to combine the two. But I think you raise a good point, though. That is, it's something that we all have to wonder about, because actually we don't know what happens behind the closed doors. I don't know what conversations they're having.
Yeah.
I don't know if Steven Spielberg is saying, nope, this is, I want the, all these shots, or if he's letting his DP, which he's often worked with, Janusz Kaminski, kind of go in there and mess around. Janusz Kaminski in an interview said he loved working with Spielberg because he felt like Steven Spielberg respected him as an artist enough to let him play with his specialty, which was lighting. Let me craft their faces and the background. And And he's like, that was the great part. He respected my side of it.
You know what we need to talk about? Because a lot of people don't understand. Because if I say, all right, I like Spielberg because he comes up with the interesting shots. And then like you say, he takes the cinematographers. All right, now here's the shot I want. How can you make it interesting? A lot of people don't understand that when we say lighting, it sounds like a really simple word to a lot of people, which is why a lot of amateur photography is really crappy.
Yeah.
People don't understand how important lighting actually is.
Tremendous amount of mathematics involved in lighting. How much...
geometry type
stuff. If you're working with film, sensitometry, the emulsion.
Is that the word? Sensitometry. It's a good word.
They could have just called it the film thing. No.
The film thing.
But the way emulsion exposes under certain
That's the
conditions.
Actual film itself.
Yeah, the film emulsion, the silver stuff on it. And how you have to measure all the lights with a light meter, ratios. And you know, this is something that all my professors constantly say, is that some of the great DPs walk, because they were so used to working with cameras and film and lighting, they could walk on a set, look around and be like, her face is 2 stops brighter than it's supposed to be.
Stop for everyone stop. Else is how much light is allowed, in layman's term, how much light is allowed into the camera.
Thank you. Yeah, that's... But they could do – I need to use a meter. But those guys with so much experience can just look at it and be like, I need that color gel on that light right now. And they know. Give me that diffusion
That's kind of like
cloth.
The science part behind the art.
Yes. It's so people – and it takes a while. It takes a long time.
Yeah, definitely.
I mean, you think that on a film set they could just set up everything perfectly. But no. If you and I are facing each other like we're playing chess against each other, if we're filming in your direction – when we're done filming with your direction, we have to change all the lights and flip them towards my direction.
Right, exactly.
So, it takes a large number of crews. So that's why you let those guys work, kind of make their magic happen.
Yeah.
But some directors, because they're very photography-based, know exactly what they want with lighting too, and they'll tell their DPs, I need 25-watt bulbs in those lamps because I need the cloth to be seen. So, but anyway, go on.
Yeah, we talked a lot about directors and cinematographers. We'll kind of move on a little bit. One more story from Spielberg, because this one is kind of mean about actors. When Drew Barrymore had to cry in E.T., I think it was, Spielberg, like just before the action, he bent down next to her ear and said, "Remember when your dog died? Action!" And she's like 5 years old at the time, so she starts bawling.
Yeah, so but that's what you have to do. I know.
That
I know
one just
it
cracked
sounds,
me up.
I know it sounds cruel.
Technically, it is, because she's just a fiver. Like, what are you taunting the fiver? But that got the performance. So,
but by the way, one quick thing about that, which is today would be considered outrageous and an ethics violation. Did you know the story about Alfred Hitchcock on birds?
No.
He had bird seeds sewn into the clothing of the little children. So the birds attacked the children for real because they wanted bird seed, and the children were screaming. And he did it because he's like, there's no other way. We're going to get a real performance. I read
That's probably
this,
true.
I read this somewhere. I don't know if it's a myth, but what I've read, it seems like it was true. The kind of person that he was from directing.
So we'll consider that apocryphal for now, but it's funny. That is funny. Sewn bird seed into the children's clothes.
Yeah, to get them
That's
to
almost like Silence of the Lab type. It puts the bird seed in his clothes or it gets the cut again.
Yeah, that could screw up a child really badly. You wouldn't be allowed to. You wouldn't get away with that today.
I would hope
with
not.
The studio teachers on
I would
set?
Hope
no
not.
Way. But
but this goes into acting too, because we're okay. talking about directors and how they go with actors. And children are actually a lot of good stories because directors have to think of different ways to get performances out of children. Two of I can think of are The Goonies and Willy Wonka. Willy Wonka, I forget the name of the original one now. Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. What was the one with Gene Wilder?
I think that was that Willy Wonka?
That was Willy Wonka.
That was
and the
Willy
new
Wonka.
One is Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. I hate Tim Burton. Look what he did to me. He ruined my childhood. Damn Tim Burton. The actual good one with Gene Wilder. You remember that one?
I've seen that
there's
one.
There's a scene where they walk into the chocolate room for the very first time with the chocolate river and, you know, all the candy plants. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
When they open that door and all the children come into the stage, that was the very first time they saw that stage. So these are a bunch of like 10-year-olds. They have no idea what's coming. They open the door and the entire warehouse is made out of candy and chocolate. So all their faces of amazement are actual real genuine faces of amazement. That was one way to do it. And the Richard Donner did the exact... I'm sorry, I don't know who the director of Willy Wonka was.
That's
I feel bad. But the Richard Donner, who directed Goonies... You remember Goonies, right?
Yes,
you
I do.
You better remember Goonies.
I love... Not too young. Oh, that was one of my
when
childhood
When they all films. Come out of the water slide and see the pirate ship, that was the very first time they had seen that set, like right through the water slide. They come up out of the water. That's the first time they've ever seen the ship. That's why they have all those amazing faces.
What year was Willy Wonka made?
Oh, that had to be 60 or 70 something, right? Nickel probably looked it up for me.
The movie came out in 71.
71. That was close.
You know,
the book was written in 64, I believe.
Oh, okay, cool.
There is something... I remember that film very well, and I remember Gene Wilder's expressions. There was...
Maybe it
was just a 70s thing, but there was something kind of...
It's a Gene Wilder thing.
No, it's just sinister about the way these characters were towards children in the 70s. There's like some... Like, it was like a realistic point of view.
Whereas, because they had more respect for children back then. But that's a different show we
maybe,
can do some
maybe
other time.
Maybe you're right. But there was, like, the way Willy Wonka gave an attitude to...
I mean, what did he do? He took him on this horrifying LSD trip
right.
in the middle of a factory tour. He let kids get sucked in the pipes and crushed and shrunk.
That one kid who kept eating all the chocolate fell in the...
Augustus Gloop.
Yeah, Augustus. There you go. Oh, man, that was great. But
what was I saying before? Movies that have impact, man. These movies tell us stories as children, and we remember them.
That's why I wanted to try LSD.
That is why, probably, you wanted to see that chicken get his head cut off randomly
That's incredible.
It was crazy.
But I just...
But let's get into actors.
But you're right about that. With
I'm
children.
Right about everything.
No, all right. He's... Oh, my goodness. But it's tough with kids, and it does take a special person to actually sit down.
You know,
and be
now
able
that
to
I think about it, because we were talking about adding categories earlier, children should have a separate category: best child actor.
Maybe I've been thinking about
that
because
that's what the Oscars need: more awards, more time. We need longer Oscars. That's another reason I don't watch the Oscars
than
anymore.
3 hours?
Yeah, because they could have... If they just did the awards, they'd be done in like 30 minutes.
That's long. I mean, 3 hours is...
But that's... They could make it shorter, and they don't. They do too much spectacle, but that's a complaint. We'll close up with why I think the Oscars are stupid.
Okay,
let's move on to how we... I think actors and actresses are actually...
I love the way he does this.
Thank you.
This is like watching art happen.
That's what
we'll
I
close with why the Oscars do anyway.
And another thing. So actors and actresses, I think their awards are actually way more objective, if you want to use that word. Yeah, than Best Picture.
Okay.
Because I think it's a lot easier to look at a group of actors or actresses. I like what Whoopi Goldberg says. She said, I'm not an actress. I'm just an actor because I can play anything. So I'm going to just use the word actor from
okay,
now on.
Okay, fine.
They're all, don't be patronizing.
No, nobody's going to shoot you for it.
They might do that.
Nobody. I mean, nobody's going to write
taking
an essay.
Me off topic.
A critique. Go ahead.
You're being a bad actor.
Sorry.
So it's easier to look at a group of films with all these actors and say which one was the best. You know, like, well, let's think of a best actor in the last few years that had an impact. It was Heath Ledger. You know, you saw how he literally dove into that character. And I don't mean that facetiously. He literally dove into the character of the Joker. He moved into a one-bedroom apartment.
Right.
He kept a diary as the Joker. He became the Joker.
Christian Bale, the machinist.
Oh, my God. Christian
Bale. He almost
Bale,
died because of that.
90 pounds or something like that?
Yeah, they told him that if he goes anymore, he could die. Daniel Day-Lewis, who goes into everything that he does. I mean, if you've seen There Will
Be Blood.
You
know what's funny? And I'm probably going to get flack for this from you, just like when I say I don't like dogs. I'm not too much of a fan of Daniel Day-Lewis anymore.
Really? Why is that?
Because it's becoming the same thing over and over again. If you all right, There Will Be Blood and Gangs of New York. Can you honestly tell me the difference between those two characters that Daniel Day-Lewis played?
Yeah, I'm sure if I actually analyze it, I can find something.
Off the top of your head. Yeah, if you actually go looking for differences. But well,
if you actually analyze something, but
on the face of it, the way he did the performance, if you took the two characters and just swapped them, the movies would have been
I think
good.
He was more three-dimensional in There Will Be Blood than he was in Gangs
what?
Of New York.
He was more
As odd as this is going to sound to maybe some of my friends, he was more sympathetic in There Will Be Blood as greedy of a person he was. I think that in Gangs of New York, there was something more frightening about who he was, but at least in Devil's Blood, there was a lot more sympathy coming from me until the very end, which was really haunts me to this day.
But do you see what I'm talking about, where he dives into the role? I mean, do you agree with Emmy at all, like even more than 0%, that his characters are becoming a little repetitive?
I don't think so.
Just the way he performed.
I don't think so.
This exemplified in a. I used to get Entertainment Weekly, and one of the Oscar issues, it had all the actors who were coming up for Best Actor, and I think this was There Will Be Blood. And for every pro, they had a pro and con for every actor in the category. And for whatever movies it was, I don't have the list in front of me of what was that year, but it said, what's so good about this guy? Oh, he did this role. It was really good. Con, he's up against Daniel Day-Lewis. The next guy, what did he do good? Oh, he dove into this role. He had a lot of emotion. Con, right. He's up against Daniel Day-Lewis. And then it was Daniel Day-Lewis's column. It said, pro, he's Daniel Day-Lewis. Con, no con, he's Daniel Day-Lewis. So it's like he's always the guy who's going to get the award by now. You know what I mean?
I know.
Even though he didn't this year. But
I
it's
understand
like it's
what
expected of him. So he always does this. In other words, if you always do the most, you take a role where you just step back a little bit, man. Show us some range. You can't always be the best because then the word best doesn't have any meaning
have you
anymore.
Seen Lincoln?
No.
Was he
reserved in that one?
He was different. Oh my goodness!
That's what I'm talking about too. In every movie of his, and which is why I like Gangs in New York and There Will Be Blood, because he's into the role. He's I am Daniel Day-Lewis, and he's pointing and gesturing, and he's like, I'm gonna take this oil, and I'm gonna be a gang leader, and you know, I'm trying to just be stupid. I'm on the radio. I have to do stupid stuff. I gotta use sound. But you know what I'm saying? He's intense.
He is intense.
I drink your milkshake.
Yeah,
I drink it up.
That was the best part.
There are T-shirts with milkshakes on them because Daniel Day-Lewis said, "I drink your milkshake."
That, I wonder if that money's going to him.
I really doubt that.
Yeah, I
will. I sincerely doubt that. So, in Lincoln, is he more reserved?
Yes.
Okay, I gotta see that. I have not seen that one. But, like, everything else before that, though, he is intense.
He is complete transformation, but it's...
It's why you don't light fires and teepees.
Here's the
because
thing.
Because the heat is intense.
I don't
intense.
Know...
You suck.
I know,
you suck,
I'm sorry. I'm bad with those.
Anyways, we're
because I'm saying? In the conversation. I forget.
I know, that was stupid.
James, you made a joke.
Thank you. I'm awesome like that. What were you going to say?
I don't know if you want to get to this. Maybe this is for another time.
Never.
But that's the debate kind of a lot of film people have about acting. What makes a great actor? Is it the one who plays the same role constantly? Is it the one who completely does different roles every time? Johnny Depp puts on a different costume every single time.
Right.
Or is it
He literally becomes the characters too.
Yeah. Or is it the person who still leaves a little bit of their personality so that they can make it natural? I don't know. I actually don't know. That's something I don't think I could ever figure out.
Well, does this go into your point about Leonardo DiCaprio you wanted to talk about?
Oh, right.
Because he's a great actor, but he's not like a Johnny Depp actor. He doesn't wear costumes, but he's different.
He's a great actor.
Yeah, he's different in every movie he's in.
I mean, I'm going to go off the list, see if you've seen some of these movies. Have you seen The Departed?
Yeah.
Catch Me If You Can?
Check.
What's Eating Gilbert Grape?
I saw parts of it. I wasn't into it.
The Aviator?
Oh, one of my favorites.
This Boy's Life?
No, when was that?
Well, this was like one of his early 1993 or 4 when he gets beaten and nasty and by Robert De Niro in this movie.
Oh,
like
good
he's
for him.
His father is a drunk a boxer and it was a great role, but he was a kid.
Okay.
He's one of my favorites, but
I saw him on Growing Pains, does that count?
Oh, I remember that show. That was a great show.
What else you got
but,
on that list?
I just named some of those because they were my favorites that he was in. Okay. Inception also.
Funny you didn't mention Titanic, that's usually the go-to.
I know. I like Titanic, but the other stuff, I like when people play grittier roles.
He's actually not the best in Titanic, good as the movie is.
Yeah, he's
but
not.
But he was good in it.
Yeah, he was good. But there's this article
that came
out. You
mention Gangs in New York again. How dare you?
I know Daniel Day-Lewis.
I'm trying to say I love that
See,
movie.
It's Daniel Day-Lewis that's me, overshadowing.
Wait. Because we're talking about Daniel Day-Lewis again. And another thing. In There Will Be Blood, he was overshadowed, I think, by Paul Dano.
Really?
You saw There Will Be Blood, didn't you?
Yeah.
He slapped the crap out of Daniel Day-Lewis in that church scene. And they were both intense. Do you remember
and
that
then
scene?
Then
he drank his milkshake.
Yeah, then he killed him.
I honestly do think Paul Dano was way better than Daniel Day-Lewis in that movie for the reason I said. Daniel Day-Lewis is great, but it's like, well, it's Daniel Day-Lewis. What else is he going to be? Whereas Paul Dano was not even supposed to have that role.
He
got that role by mistake as a little quirk and someone else dropping out, and he He ate that roll up.
That was
ate it up.
That was very surprising to see him do that.
Yeah.
And he, by the way, he did something similar to that in 12 Years a Slave.
Paul Dano's in that too?
Yeah, very sinister.
I'm a
where
big
he,
fan of
he
his.
Gets beaten up again in 12 Years a Slave. Nice.
But we're talking about Leonardo DiCaprio.
Yeah, there's this article in Vanity Fair by James S. Murphy. It was interesting. It was talking about how it gave us a spectrum for acting. There is the Brad Pitt side of it.
Yep.
And the Tom Hanks side of the spectrum. It's called
both great actors.
It's called this Pitt Hanks continuum.
The Hanks continuum.
The Pitt Hanks continuum.
We should call it the Hanks Pitt continuum. That sounds a lot.
That
funnier.
Does sound better. But
where are you in Hanks Pitt?
But I'm on five. But it talks about how there are some actors who play the cool part. Mm-hmm. Very well, like Steve McQueen did back
cool,
in
Cool, as in being cool, confident, suave. Type.
No, not necessarily the mysterious type, like Marlon Brando did at some point.
Like
Paul
on the
Newman.
Waterfront.
I'm sorry,
Marlon Brando and On the Waterfront.
Yeah, but they played a very mysterious character where you couldn't entirely identify with their vulnerability, but there's something mysterious about them that drove you towards them. And then there's the Tom Hanks side where Tom Hanks makes you feel extremely vulnerable, like in Castaway, when it's just like this man is crying his eyes out to be alive, to live. And
yeah, there's a run line. He's the only man who can make you cry over a volleyball.
Right. But he does these roles where you sit in that chair with him and you cry with him. And the argument was that Leo plays some of these great roles, but there's a mystery to his characters. It's not like what Matthew McConaughey did in Dallas Buyers Club, and it also makes the same case for Matthew McConaughey. They said he used to be that kind of an actor, and then he's now doing these really like these roles where he immerses his entire life into it. Chiwetel Ejiofor. Butchered that.
Yeah, you
Chiwetel Ejiofor, I think. He, in 12 Years
Utifor?
A Slave...
isn't it Utifor?
Utifor?
I think so.
But he immerses himself completely. But even with Tom Hanks, it said that he did Captain Phillips, and only in the last 15 minutes did you finally see his vulnerability. Mm-hmm. Before that, he was mysterious. And you mostly sympathize with the pirates. So it was
Did you see Cloud Atlas?
I did see Cloud Atlas.
Tom Hanks was really good in that. Yeah, it was a great movie. I'll say this. It was a great story. I think the movie itself was pretty horrible because I didn't like the intercutting. I wish they... Did we talk about this already in the show?
I think...
But I'll say
it
again
anyway. Actually.
They should have made the movie like the book where it was one story, then one story, then one story. I think the intercutting ruined it. Because it's four different eras is the point. And he had four different roles in it. And Tom Hanks's is. He had a gritty 1970s pseudo author. He's like, a gangster turned
that
author or
was
something.
The best.
He has a demon. He's not the demon. He plays the guy in the future who has demons. So he's like seeing things and he's kind of crazy. And he has the nuclear physicist in the 60s. And then who was the other one? Oh, the weasel from like the 1800s, the doctor who's the bad guy. So
was he? Yeah, I think.
Yeah, he was the doctor who was killing the main.
Yeah, that was intense. But
he had four different roles, and everyone was so separate. It was really good.
He the gangster. When I saw that, I was laughing in my
seat. It reminded me of Tom Cruise in. When he plays the movie producer in Tropic Thunder,
yeah,
because it's like you know who the guy is, and maybe it's the skull cap and the beard. Maybe people have reactions to being bald.
I don't know, but there was something about.
I'd love to quote Tropic Thunder on the radio, but I have a feeling Nick would not.
Yeah,
be
I don't
that.
Think I know what you're gonna. I know exactly.
Take
what
a step
you're
back and blankety blank, blankety blank.
Yeah, but also Hugh Grant was hilarious in that.
You
movie.
Like Hugh Grant? Oh, in Cloud Atlas.
Yeah, that when he played the elder who was wealthy and had it was so odd.
You mean in the primitive one?
Yeah, he's old. He has curly hair and he's rich. He's like he's trying to help his brother out from the.
Oh, that one.
That yeah, but
the one that was amazing was the primitive culture.
Yeah,
when
that
he's
was,
the cannibal.
Oh, what a scary!
I remember when I first saw. I was like, wait a minute, that's Hugh Grant.
Yeah, that was Hugh. But
so, I was like, wow, he's actually a good actor, and I guess he's not all British, because, you know, British are wusses.
Wow.
I'm just kidding.
Hey.
It wouldn't be my,
are you Brit? No,
it wouldn't
you're
be
not.
My show if
Nick
I didn't say
British.
Something stupid every once in a while.
But with Hanks, he does those roles, and then with Captain Phillips, I think he did amazing, but maybe this the argument from James Murphy is that maybe for the Academy, they want to see characters who make you feel something emotionally, make you feel emotionally vulnerable, make you cry, laugh at the same time,
right,
and go through a range of emotions.
I think Leonardo DiCaprio does that sometimes, though.
I agree. For me, he does.
Which had Tom Hanks in it, too.
For me, it does. Yeah. He does. But
I think most people don't like Leonardo DiCaprio because he's too pretty.
Oh, you think he's like, oh, he's the nice-looking guy?
Because he looks, if you just saw Leonardo DiCaprio, I've thought this for a while, you think, well, he's probably just some dumb oddle. He looks like some guy, like if you see a really plump, pretty blonde woman, the stereotype is dumb blonde, and then she starts talking about, you know, like biology and my biochemistry, and like, oh my God, this woman knows what she's talking about, because we're all biased in our heads. It's for guys, too. If a guy is too pretty, you'll think, wow, he's probably just a dumb blonde, too.
Yeah, a lot of people think that about certain actors. Oh, he's too nice looking. He can't possibly do this.
Yeah, I'm not trying to say Tom Hanks is ugly. I don't want to do that, because my wife always says I look like him, which I think is kind of crazy, but I don't want to. So I might want to call him ugly. But she says I act like him in his old comedies, which is one reason I want him to do more comedies, because apparently that's what I'm like. And so he's not ugly, he's not gorgeous, he plays an acceptable, attractive everyman. You know what I'm saying?
I can see what you're saying. Yeah, but with
he's
Leo,
more identifiable.
Leo, I think is identifiable in many ways.
His characters are. I don't know if he is.
Right, okay, I see what you're saying.
We only have a few minutes left.
Okay.
Let's talk about why the Oscars sucks, I promise.
Okay,
that.
Go for it.
I already mentioned the hipster stuff, right? We have 10 minutes to go. Hey, we're going over noon. Or over noon. We're going over noon because we start at noon. We're going over one. All right. Well, let's just dive into it anyway.
Okay,
why
go
the
ahead.
Oscars suck. We already talked about the hipster stuff because no one cares about the movies that have been. Oh, all right, so let's go back to the list of best pictures. Now, in the last few years, it was things like, The Artist, The King's Speech, movies that I think are pretentious films. Because literally, who cares about a king who can't talk, right? And The Hurt Locker, where it's not pretentious material, it's about PTSD in bomb squad people in, I don't know if they're Marines or Army guys, but it's part of the bomb squad of the Army. I don't remember what they're called. You know what I'm talking about? They take care of the mines.
No, I know. I don't know the name of the squad.
Okay. Well, anyway, so it's about how he's obsessed with doing his job and he can't go home and be happy. He has to be disarming a bomb. He has to do dangerous. It's really gritty stuff, and it's why I like Jeremy Renner. I immediately became a Jeremy Renner fan, and why I was like, oh, he's in the Avengers now? I have like a big man. He's the newborn, by the way. It's like, I have a total man crush on Jeremy Renner. But the movie was just not good. It was just a boring movie. It had such good material, and I watched it once, and it's interesting once, but it's not like Saving Private Ryan type war movie where it affects you viscerally, which is what I think a war movie should do. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, but it affects...
I'm also picking on Hurt Locker because that's the one that won over Avatar, and I think that movie affected people more.
Affecting you, I could have. What if it did affect somebody viscerally? I'm not. I like the movie,
no,
but it
I
didn't affect me
it's
viscerally.
Not, it's not my, not the James Awards,
right,
the Academy
it's not,
Awards.
Yeah, that's
my
why.
My point is that I would see, when I talk to people about the movies, it's my opinion in my limited range.
Naturally.
It seems to me that when people talk about the two different movies, that one affected them more than the other. That's my opinion. And this brings to me another point. A lot of people would make the joke, oh, you know, they're just so political now. I honestly think they have become political a little bit. Because people weren't talking about The Hurt Locker. They weren't talking about Avatar. They were talking about how James Cameron, oh, man, I forgot the woman's name. That makes me real sexist. But the woman who directed Hurt Locker, how they used to be married. And how they're kind of competition.
Catherine Bigelow?
Yes. They used to be married, and now they're not. Now they're up against it. She might be, I think she was the first woman to win the award for Best Director. And so that's politics. I mean, who cares if she has a penis or vagina? Was the movie good? But you can't totally... That's impossible. I'm not saying that it's... That you
What's
can
impossible?
Removing politics entirely.
Right.
You cannot do that. I think that now it's almost too much. I mean, that's why movies like The King's Speech and in a way, 12 Years a Slave, right, while they win. Because I like one comic was talking about how 12 Years a Slave, you know... The point of the comic was that it confirms that, you know, white guilt will get you awards, basically.
Oh, were you talking about Ellen DeGeneres' comment?
No, I'm talking about the movie itself, 12 Years a Slave.
Oh, no.
How
no,
white
no.
people will go see the movie, feel guilty, and think, oh, that has to be a great movie because I was such a piece of crap, even though I wasn't a piece of crap, you know what I mean?
Because Ellen said something funny.
That was so stupid. Are you talking about Liza Minnelli?
No.
Oh, she's yeah. That's another thing no. stupid about the Oscars. It is politics because now you can't make a joke without the entire friggin' world getting upset at you.
I didn't know they got upset at her for that, but she said something. Either 12 Years a Slave is going to win Best Picture, which again I'm happy that it did.
Okay.
But or You're All Racist, and she yeah. said it. She said it laughing, and everybody laughed. It was I think it was funny. She's basically talking about the political climate of things. However,
yeah, the political
I do
climate,
think
yeah.
that if people see the movie, it will you'll give that movie the award on its merit yeah. of being a really good movie, not about the politics. It's actually a really good movie. Right. So, but anyway, go ahead. I detracted you from.
No, that's okay. That's what the point of the show is.
Yeah, but you were, I think you were on a roll for a second there. I want to hear what you have to.
Remember when they went to 10 nominees from 5 for Best yeah. Picture? One of them they. It wasn't, like, confirmed. The Academy didn't come out and said, we made it 10 because we wanted this movie. But a lot of people were saying, well, they did it for District 9. They wanted District 9 on the list, and they couldn't just make it 6 and throw District 9 on there. So they made it 10. And a lot of people were kind of happy about that because I'm not going to say it's most because I honestly don't know if it is. But I know most of the audience in theaters is teenagers, but I don't know if most of the audience is sci-fi lovers. I would want to say it may be going that way because with the prevalence of comic movies, comic television shows, and Comic-Con becoming a major, major venue
yeah.
for movies now.
It is.
Like, people are still like, are there comic books at Comic-Con? You know, I thought it was just the Marvel movie conference. So I think that was one reason why people were so happy District 9 was on the list. Like, wow, a sci-fi movie can be Best Picture? How cool would that be? And it didn't get it. That was actually when the Hurt Locker got it. So I thought it was actually a double kind of punch in the face. Because Avatar wasn't really on there for being Best Picture, for being a sci-fi picture. It was Dances with Wolves in Space, basically. It wasn't sci-fi
right.
the way District 9 was. So it was really cool that everyone was saying, oh, wow, movies we like are on the Oscars. Because
yeah.
You know what I'm saying when I say pretentious? Where most people who go to the movies to just enjoy movies, they just don't like these quote pretentious movies about kings and talking, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I know, but it's a certain demographic. So some people do. I don't know. I mean,
some people do.
Some, but those could be a most that we're not considering. I know it's weird, but
yeah,
like,
I know.
Like a most teenage. I don't know. I know some of my friends hated that movie.
It seemed to be going. I bring it up too because it seemed like a reversal. Because a few years before. Before that was Slumdog Millionaire, which was kind of on the border of art film versus popular film, because it was an art independent movie. It was made in India. It's not
yeah.
I don't know if it's an Indian film because it's a British director.
Yeah.
But it was a great movie, by the
way.
Danny
loved
Boyle,
it.
Another one of my all-time favorites.
Love Danny Boyle.
So that was like on the border of an indie movie versus a popular movie. But before that, what do we have? We have No Country for Old Men, The Departed, Crash, Million Dollar Baby, The Lord of the Rings. But then before that, it was a little more intellectual. But now even Gladiator. Remember when Gladiator won? It was a movie with guys just throwing. I recently just saw Gladiator, and someone was telling me it really affected her life. Loved the movie. I'm like, it's a great movie. It can do that. But if you think about it, Gladiator's kind of a thin film. It's not much depth to it emotionally.
Yeah.
That's just one reason I like it so much, because it's a movie where the point is in the title. We're going to show you a movie about gladiators, and they're going to kill each other.
That's
yeah!
it.
And it's not superficial like Twilight or something, but it's not deep like The Departed.
Yeah.
But it's a good movie.
Yeah.
And that's why it won. So when I see movies being like The Hurt Locker and The King's Speech and The Artist winning, and even just some movies being neglected like Avatar, it makes me feel like they're disconnected in a way from actually who cares about movies. Like an ivory tower type syndrome. You know what I'm talking
yeah,
about?
Yeah, I don't think they're concerned with.
Well, that's the whole point of an ivory tower, right? Is that they're not concerned.
Yeah, they just want it's their awards.
I don't want a totally populist, like I don't want the Transformers to win Best Picture because it made the most money. I think there needs to be like a balance somewhere.
I think that the Academy will just be like, well, we created this award for our purposes.
Their awards. Well, and we only have a minute left, but that's not my biggest gripe. My biggest gripe of the Oscars is that no one cares anymore because it's too damn long.
What do you mean? Oh,
the ceremony.
Oh, yeah.
3 hours. It's not.
It's long.
If you just and the speeches, we have an economic downturn. We have the 99%, the 1%, and here's a ceremony for 3 hours where rich people are going, isn't it cool to be rich? Yeah, yeah, yeah. Let's spend money. Rich, rich, rich.
I thought Jared Leto's speech was really good, though.
Yeah, his
mentioned,
okay.
He mentioned Ukraine, and so he was... There was something really seemed genuine when he walked up there.
I just don't like how much emphasis is put on these speeches anymore. Just go up there, say thanks, get off the stage.
I wonder, do they still have a clock?
I wanted a literal hook. How cool that giant hook comes off the side of the stage, just swipes them off the screen. And Nick is going to be playing our own music, so we got to get out of here. He's going to come out here and just hook our heads off. That wouldn't be good radio.
That would be perfect.
All right, so we've been just ranting about movies for an hour. Thanks for joining us. You've been listening to kpcradio.com. I'm James.
I'm Robert.
Catch us next week. Thanks.